Hour number two of Darren and Dominic on this Friday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day. Just trying to wrap up this week. Darren McFarland, Willie Dominic with you. It is going to be electric tomorrow night in Rupp Arena in Lexington. The Vols, the number one team in the land. Kentucky, the number five team in the land, even though they were upset on a little bit of a controversy, but a buzzer beater or a tip-in there this week as they fell to LSU at home. And it is going to be the matchup Saturday night. 7 o'clock our time is when they tip things off. And it is going to be the first of, well, at least we know two matchups between these two teams. But it could be more. And to help us with all that and more, David Ubben is on the line with us from The Athletic. He covers the Vols. David, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. There's a lot of anticipation for this matchup, and like I said, we know there's two guaranteed games, but we're anticipating a third in our city at the SEC tournament to finish things up on Sunday, and then who knows? They could collide in the NCAA tournament as well.
Very true. I mean, I think, you know, Tennessee, I think the biggest asset that they have, you know, you don't get to 23-1 by accident. They just don't play really poor games. I mean, the Vanderbilt game is kind of the only time that they really – didn't play well, but they're so experienced and so deep that, you know, if Grant Williams has a bad night or Admiral Schofield has a bad night, you know, they got four or five other guys who can give you 20 points. I mean, the other night they put five guys in double figures, and Grant Williams, you know, a National Player of the Year candidate, isn't one of them. And so that's a huge asset for Tennessee, and I think, you know, you look at Kentucky, they've been a little bit more inconsistent, but for the Vols, you know, maybe they don't have as high a ceiling as some of these teams like Duke or Kentucky or, you know, teams that have so much NBA talent, but they bring it every single night, and that's how you get to number one in the polls and to you know, only have one loss on the docket.
Look, and I've said it this week, David, I certainly don't want to take anything away from what Rick Barnes and Tennessee has done. They have deserved everything. They deserve the ranking and their record. They've won 18 in a row, but I think what's interesting is down the stretch, the remaining portion of their schedule, I think we're going to really find out what this team is all about, because you're talking about two matchups against Kentucky, some tricky road games against LSU and Ole Miss and Auburn, Mississippi State at home. I mean, that's a tricky finish, and I guess when the smoke clears, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
It will, and I think, you know, that's sort of the thing with this Tennessee team is, on the one hand, it is fair that they haven't played, you know, the best teams in the SEC, but they have – you know, handed out quite a few beatings since
they aren't
going to be top half teams. And I think that's obviously a really good indicator of a team's quality is, you know, if they're just tearing through people, you know, I think Tennessee probably does lose a game or two at some point before the ACC tournament. But it's not out of the question that they don't, just because, like I said, that they've brought it every single game this season. And that's something to be said, and that's really hard to do and really rare in college basketball. But it helps you have so many upperclassmen and so many guys that can contribute like this team does.
I do want to ask that because, one hand, it just shows you how good they are. Because, as you mentioned, I mean, they're having their way. It's like they toy with teams at times. They get way up, and the team makes a run. And as soon as they get kind of close, they go, okay, enough of that. And they go surging right back ahead, up by 16, 18. Well, you know, I'd say chances are this game is going to be a nail-biter, I would think. And it's going to come down to maybe the final possession, and it could come down to a bucket. How do you think this team, they haven't been in one of those games in a while, how do you think they'll fare in a game like that?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, ultimately I think they'll be okay. I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, we're not going to see a Louisville out of this team. We're not going to see them, you know, completely melt down because they've seen so much. This team is so experienced and brings so much back. You know, they've experienced losses. They've gotten their butts kicked in previous years. And last year they were in a ton of tight games. You know, came out on top on a few of those and lost a few of those. And so this year, you know, if I was Rick Barnes, I might be a little concerned that they haven't had, you know, very many situations, you know, beyond Vanderbilt and a couple others where, you know, you're down four with 3 minutes left and all of a sudden you've got to execute with perfection, you know, with time on line. They haven't been in too many of those situations this year, but they have in the past. And so, you know, if they can sort of, you know, is it like riding a bike where, you know, when you get those situations you can do that, you know, we'll find out. But I don't think this is a team that you're going to see sort of crack or melt down just because, like I said, they're so experienced and so balanced. And they moved the ball well. It's an unselfish team. So I'm really interested to see how this plays out in Rupp Arena. I think it's really got a great shot to be a classic game and one of the best games of the year.
You know, what's interesting, too, is as Tennessee comes in, David, they have a lot of swirling controversy based on what happened in the last game. The tip-in by LSU at the buzzer that appeared to be in the cylinder, perhaps basket interference, offensive goaltending, whatever you want to say. And now there's a lot of talk about perhaps changing the rule and a rule change coming because of this. And it, to be honest, I don't know why it's not already in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of a separate discussion. I mean, I think it'll be interesting. I mean, obviously you're not going to see anything this year. But, you know, it's an interesting conversation. You know, me personally, I would tend to agree. You know, I don't know why that rule has not been in there already as a protection for a situation like this. But, you know, I think, you know, the idea that it's going to have too much impact on this game and that you're going to get an angrier, a more focused Kentucky team, you know, I don't know. I think those kind of things, too, are not true to reality. I think Kentucky will show up and they'll be ready to play and they'll be excited about it. And I think the LSU game, by the time they tip off against Tennessee, will be pretty far in the rearview mirror.
You know, I thought it was interesting. I like how in The Athletic, you know, you guys are able to collaborate with one another. You know, if you look at the page for college basketball, you see your stuff if you're following Tennessee, but then somebody else will jump in there. I enjoyed Dana O'Neill's piece on the care package, if you will, or the off-season program that has helped shape the mentality and the conditioning of this team.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of this, too. I mean, the body transformation, I mean, Coach G, their strength coach, Garrett Medwald, I mean, he's a big part of what they do. And you look at Tennessee and you look at Admiral Schofield and you look at Grant Williams, I mean, they just, their bodies do look different than a lot of the guys that they show up playing against. And especially that those things come into play whenever you, are going up against really talented guys that are, you know, going to be top 10 NBA picks, but are 18-year-old kids. And Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield are not that. I thought, you know, Frank Martin talked the other night. You know, he was talking about how Tennessee really bullied them with their physicality and that, you know, he would say that we set a screen on Tennessee and they just blow us up. And that screen would be completely bunk and it would not work and it would just be kind of a jumbled mess. And then Tennessee sets a screen, like, and they screen you. You're not going anywhere. And that was the difference, he said, he felt like. And the game a lot is that, you know, Tennessee had a lot of easier time running their offense. And those transformed bodies, I mean, it's a big part of why Tennessee is where they are right now. And they're kind of a rarity in college sports. You have a lot of 3- and 4-year guys that aren't going to blink.
It's interesting to really follow how this has evolved over time because, you know, when you're a kid, a lot of times, unless you have somebody on top of you, you're not even tapping into that resource at all, just watching what you eat, you know, thinking about what you're putting into your body. So you get on the college campus, you might have some bad habits, but you also have a lot of room to improve, as it showed. They called it fat camp, and just the diet and doing the different things can change the body, as you said, especially as these guys grow between ages 18 and 21.
It definitely can. I mean, it's a formative time, and I think, you know, especially in Tennessee's case, I mean, the proof is in the low-fat pudding. So you can't argue with results.
Darren, I don't know about you, but I did not have a whole lot of low-fat pudding
now. I don't even know what that is.
In our suite in college, we went with the Munchie Mart.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of chips, a lot of, you know, stuff that wasn't really good for you.
Hey, David, what do you make of Barry Odom's comments, certainly directed toward Jeremy Pruitt and the Vols?
You know, I understand where he's coming from. His coaching brethren of their current plight. He's going to be looking a long, long time. That's not how college football works, especially at this high level. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt is doing everything he can to transform his roster and get more talent in here. And, you know, it's not breaking a rule, and I get that he's angry, but just like, man, that's the game. Like, that is college football, and that is a guy in Jeremy Pruitt who, you know, is desperate to try and build his program. And, you know, he's definitely not going to care about what Barry Odom thinks about his efforts to do so. I mean, Tennessee is within their rights to do it, and I think his complaints are going to fall on deaf ears.
Is his complaint about them reaching out to current players or recruit? What is the specific complaint about? Is it about current players or recruits?
Yeah, it's current players. There's five specific guys that the Tennessee is sort of eyeing, and basically, you know, Missouri, now that they're on a bowl ban, seniors are free to transfer. And so Barry Odom is stuck in a place where he's re-recruiting his seniors and saying, hey, guys, let's do this. Let's pick it out, even though they can't play for the SEC title. They can't go to a bowl game. And Jerry Pruitt obviously does not have those same restrictions, and he's trying to get a couple linemen, DeMarcus Acy and another defensive back. But that's basically what it is. And it sounds like Tennessee's coaches have been pretty aggressive. I think Barry Odom said they're calling every day. But again, I mean, that's the game. Like, that's what it is. Missouri is in a situation where, you know, fair or not, the NCAA has levied its sanctions, and Missouri is dealing with that and appealing that. And I think I'm sure they're telling players they feel like their appeals are going to be successful. But Tennessee's going to do what they got to try and do to make their team better. And I don't think, if Barry Odom saying, hey, back off, that's not going to do much.
Yeah, interesting.
I remember the 30 for 30 when SMU got hit with the death penalty way back when, the free-for-all that was going on.
Sure.
With all the players, it was a meat market.
Well, don't forget the whole Baylor fallout in the basketball program. One of their big players went to Mississippi State.
Penn State, I mean, Tim Beckman famously had his entire staff outside of Penn State's facility after those sanctions dropped.
Yep.
So, I mean, this is not anything new, and I don't know what Barry Odom thinks is going to happen by complaining about this, even though it was, you know, with boosters, I think, and not really in an interview necessarily. But it's just not going to do anything, you know, even if he feels like, oh, well, we beat Tennessee last year and we did this or that, or we're a better program. Like, the situation is what it is, and kids are going to make the decision that they feel like is best for them. And I don't think anything Barry Odom says publicly beyond recruiting those players is going to have any effect on what Tennessee does. Or even, you know, I don't think anybody can blame Tennessee. I mean, anybody watch Tennessee realize, and they need some help, you know. They're going to be the only program in the SEC that watches the NFL Combine next month and doesn't see any of their players. That's a problem.
Yikes. David, enjoyed the visit as always. Thanks for doing this.
Appreciate it, guys. Anytime. Thanks.
All right, David Ubben. You can find his work at The Athletic, and he covers the Vols for them. We'll come back. There's been a GM fired in the NBA, a pitcher has gotten a new extension with a big team. We'll tell you all about that and talk a little bit more about what you just heard there with David. More of Darren and Donick next. I told you an NBA general manager just got fired. New Orleans Pelicans have parted ways with GM Dell Demps. He's been the GM since 2010. When the team was still the Hornets. But, of course, this whole Anthony Davis mess down in New Orleans, they have decided to move on from Demps. Looks like right now either David Booth or Danny Ferry may end up being in that role as the interim.
Remember, Danny Ferry got in trouble for some comments.
With the Hawks.
So I guess they might give him a second shot here.
Some stuff that he said in meetings, right? And it was recorded. Is that right?
Like, yeah. Some things that were derogatory in tone. Of course, this is a guy that played forever in the NBA.
Yep.
So it was definitely a screw-up by him. But certainly that's the reason he's been sort of in the backdrop for a while.
So Dell Demps out. With the Pelicans, the Yankees have given Severino a new four-year, $40 million contract extension, which I think for what he brings to the table, that is in the bargain bin.
Well, what you're doing, and it's very similar to what Philadelphia just did with Aaron Nola, the former LSU pitcher.
But he got three for 45?
Well, it's an extension, right? So what you're doing is – you're locking those guys up before they become arbitration eligible where their price tag can really go up.
Why would they do that? Those are two special those are two special pitchers. Why would they do that?
I think it's a smart move
for the player or for the organization.
The organization,
right? Why I say why would the players do that?
Guaranteed money, you know, in case you blow your arm out.
Oof. But those two,
there's always the possibility, right?
They probably left a lot of money on the table, a lot.
Well, they still. You know, the compromise is you're not locking them up for 7 or 8 years, right? You're only 3 or 4, and you're still going to have a chance to get the big contract once that contract is up.
Doesn't it feel like baseball's finally wised up and realized that all the, you know, these guaranteed contracts and signing these guys for 7, 8, 9, 10 years is just absolutely absurd?
There's only a few guys that have been worth it, right? And so far, David Price is on a good track, but of course, He's an example of he went year to year. The Rays just played the arbitration game every year, and then they knew they weren't going to be able to keep him, so they traded him. And then it became a situation of who was going to sign him to the big contract when he hit unrestricted free agency. The Red Sox bit. They're spending a lot of money, but he is a guy that eats innings. Max Scherzer is another guy who signed the big contract. But he's been durable.
He's been worth it.
But for every guy like those guys, there's a handful. There's plenty of others that, you know, within a couple of years of that big contract, they just aren't the same pitcher. When you get into your 30s, all the wear and tear. Johan Santana comes to mind. Pedro Martinez with the Mets. Remember that? When they signed him, they got about 2 years out of him at best before he started breaking down. You know, the list goes on. Jordan Zimmermann for the Tigers, boy, would they love to do that one over? I mean, they're still paying him a ton of money. So I think they're trying to rework it. Now, the Mets are in that situation with Jacob deGrom right now. He's, you know, the time's ticking on him and Noah Syndergaard. That's why you're starting to hear Syndergaard's name in trade talks, because teams are not sure that they want to spend the next big contract, knowing how expensive it's going to be, on guys who have pitched a lot of innings and are heading towards their high 20s and low 30s at age.
Did you see DeGrom had to send his Cy Young back? It was damaged.
What
it was
happened?
All messed up. The wording was all messed up.
Oh, no.
Most typos? Outstanding? Yeah, it was all.
What?
Guess they got botched in delivery, so he had to send it back.
What's the story behind that?
I don't know.
Oh, no.
Somebody have a ring? Does he have a ring in his house where he can see the video when it was dropped off? Do they punt it to the porch? I don't know. What do you make of Barry Odom's comments? What do you make about him belly aching? That here's the one thing I think it does go on. I understand. I know it goes on, and it's silly to complain about something that everybody does. But I will say this: shouldn't the NCAA, and hold your laughter, please, because they're a bunch of collective boobs. They have no idea what they're doing. They have no power. They're slow as turtles to anything. Shouldn't they have a rule that says you can't, guys that are active and on your roster, you can't be openly having conversations with them, social media or otherwise, when you're on somebody else's roster? I mean, in professional sports, it's tampering, right? You always hear tampering. Like, Magic Johnson, you can't talk about that guy. He plays for another team. That's tampering. Now, give us some money. What, isn't that tampering? I mean, why should you be allowed to talk to kids on other rosters? You shouldn't be allowed to do that.
It's absolutely tampering. I don't know what the actual rule is, because the players are not in the transfer portal.
Right, they're just seniors. They can transfer, but they're on a roster. You should not be able to reach out to them and say, hey,
you can't go to a bowl this year. Sorry.
You're kind of stuck.
We could go to a bowl. We actually need a couple of players.
We could use you. Like, you can't do that.
You shouldn't do that, but it's natural.
I'm saying the NCAA should allow that. They can do it. That's a problem.
Okay, let's say that there's a hard, fast rule, and I'm sure there is. But can you really stop? Let's say I am your dad, or I'm your high school coach. You're a senior at Missouri. And I go to you and say, Darren, you know, let's just talk about you right here. You're going into your senior year, unfortunate with the academics, you know, you're going to graduate, you could be a grad transfer, whatever your situation is, you got 1 year to go. Would you like to look around and see what's out there? I'll do the dirty work for you. You don't have to talk to anybody.
Who are you again?
I am your dad or high school coach. I'm your confidant, right? What's to keep me from going out and doing all of the work behind the scenes?
That's a different story. If somebody from the kids' camp is out there putting feelers out of, hey, my kid, you know, probate, this latest story, you know,
I just talked to Coach Pruitt. I'm going to relay back to you.
He would be interested.
He said you could be the starting guard.
But that's not the case. This is me from X school fill in the blank.
Just flat out calling
you. Hey,
yeah.
Mr. Donick, so you know, we are more than happy to take your son. If he wants to come to Knoxville right now or fill in the blank school campus, we will take him right now. That is you coming. It's one thing for you to reach out and say, hey, just want to let you know, my kid, with the latest news, will be more than willing to look elsewhere. Oh, okay. Would you guys have any interest in him? Yeah. Well, how much interest? Well, actually a lot. We actually have an open space
okay,
right there.
I'm just telling you, I agree with you that it's wrong for direct contact, but the net result is going to be the same.
It's not, right? Though. You're reaching out to them.
The same information is going to get back to you.
No.
Right?
No. You're trying to persuade them. They haven't reached out to you. If they're reaching out to you, you're not persuading anybody. You're telling them, hey, just so you know, I'm available. My services are available. The role's reversed. I'm not saying anything. You're going, hey, hello. I know you're in there. Look at the wind. It's us. We're up. I know you can hear me. Come to Tennessee. You can hear us. Come to Knoxville. It'll be great. Do you want him standing outside the house screaming that?
Like John Cusack?
Yes. There's a difference.
Say anything?
You don't think there's a difference?
No, there's a difference, but the net result is the same.
Give me five minutes. Just open up the door. We have pizza. Just open the door up. Give us 5 minutes. Don't you see? There's a difference.
There's a difference. I completely sympathize with Barry Odom. Now, they made their own bed, right? They're partially responsible. They
agree.
They committed the violations. They got themselves on probation.
But let the kid decide, this is not for me anymore. Like, I don't want to be here for this year. We've messed up, so I want to get out. Let the kid decide. They don't have schools blowing them up going, hey, come here, come here. Hey, come, you should come here. You can start right away. We can play in bowl games.
There's also a lot that Barry Odom's got to be doing behind the scenes. Number one, hopefully, if you're a good coach, you've created a good culture despite the academic fraud, which, you know, can't be overlooked. But hopefully your players have enjoyed playing for you, have enjoyed the atmosphere, the environment you've created on campus, and that's worth something, getting your degree, et cetera, and just wanting to finish out, wanting to stay where you've been comfortable for a long time. That's important. And for the student or for the player, hopefully you've enjoyed your experience. That's worth something. It's a big X factor when you leave. It doesn't always work out. Just because you can go to a bowl game doesn't mean you're going to have a great experience at whatever other place you might choose. So there is some re-recruiting going on.
Yep. We will talk to Dan Shulman at 11:45. He is going to be on the call for Kentucky and Tennessee and Lexington. Don't forget, you just made the list coming up at noon. Fleetwood Mac tickets to give away at Bridgestone Arena, but you better bring it. You better bring it. We're not just going to give them away. You're going to have to bring it. You have to earn them. It's good tickets. That's coming up at noon. I've got mine, and mine is, I can't believe it, it's going to be golf-related. What? Yeah, it's going to be golf related. We'll come back. More of Darren and Donick next. Catch MTSU. The Blue Raiders facing off against Marshall. That'll be in West Virginia tomorrow. Blue Raiders fell up in Bowling Green last night to the Hilltoppers. Coverage begins at 12:30 p.m. tomorrow. Tip-off at 1. Coverage heard on 94.9 Game 2. Speaking of college hoops, we'll talk to Dan Shulman coming up in about 10 minutes. There, as said, there's a controversial ending. We talked about it. In Rupp Arena, Kentucky fell to LSU. And there's now maybe some forward progress or at least some discussions about what is, just like we were talking about, yet again, another bad rule in the NCAA. What are you seeing on this?
Kyle Tucker, who we've had on our show many times over the years, covers Kentucky for The Athletic. And he has done a lot of follow-up ever since the controversial ending a couple of nights ago where LSU wins at the buzzer at Rupp. It was 71 all. Guy dribbles length of the court, flips it up at the basket. Everybody's crashing. And as the buzzer sounds, LSU follows it up, the tip in to win it, in plenty of time before the buzzer went off. But he appeared to be in the cylinder, or at least very close to being, if he wasn't. And it was not reviewable. Now, you can also say, if you watch the play closely, Kentucky had a guy who went up to try to block the initial shot and went up through the basket, so he may have committed a violation. So that might have complicated a review process. But let's put that aside for now. The rule is, right now, you cannot go review that particular play, even though it's a game-changing play. It's either overtime or that's it. So Kyle Tucker kept after the SEC office. And, of course, this is happening in one of the epicenters, if not the epicenter of college basketball, right? If this happened in Oxford, Mississippi, or Lubbock, Texas, or, you know, over
the
state
was
of
on
Washington.
A, it was on a national stage.
Yes,
it was on
a Rupp Arena.
There were a lot
right?
of eyes on that game.
So you are not going to ignore.
Nationally.
You are not going to ignore the reaction of the Kentucky Nation on
Look,
this
college
one, right?
basketball actually had some good a lot of eyes on their product Tuesday night. You had Kentucky, LSU, followed by Duke and
yeah.
Louisville.
So, you know, they basically offered a no comment after the game, the SEC office. Okay, so Kyle Tucker followed up. Finally, they did come back today with a statement. The SEC has been proactive in experimenting with collaborative instant
yeah.
replay. I think they have over the years. I give them credit.
Have they?
In the big picture, I think they have. But what other baseball league has instant replay? They were the first. It's very primitive. It's really not great, but they're trying. They have it in there. So I will give them credit on that. I don't think that's a lot of baloney.
Okay.
I'm talking about the SEC, okay? They've experimented with collaborative instant replay. They will recommend further exploration of the use of instant replay in game-ending situations, including the ability to evaluate basket interference. The SEC will use its position on relevant committees to introduce discussion on video replay related to game-ending situations. SEC Associate Commissioner for Men's Basketball Dan Leibovitz has already initiated conversations with the national coordinator and on this subject. So, some interesting thoughts from John Calipari, right? This is what he said in the aftermath of this. Do you remember when we lost in the Final Four when there was a shock? This is the undefeated Kentucky team that lost to Wisconsin.
Yes.
And this is Towns.
Yes.
That was the team, right? They were a really good team.
Karl Anthony Towns.
Karl Anthony Towns. We lost in the Final Four when there's a shot clock violation, not called, but clearly it was a violation late in the game against Wisconsin in the 2015 Final Four, and they said it was not reviewable. Then they changed the rule to say, why would you want to lose a game on a shot clock violation when it's easy to go check? Well, this one's easy to go check. So it does make you wonder, why didn't they just all in one motion decide that these were all plays that could happen? It's just there's something missing on these committees where they discuss this, because that would be an obvious one for decades. This has been an issue at the end of the games, tip-ins, offensive rebounds at the end of a game. Where are you in the cylinder or not in the cylinder? Why wouldn't that have gone right along with the shot clock?
You're asking me why they don't have common sense and why they can't hit the important issues. I have no answer
so
to that. It makes no sense whatsoever.
I'm with Calipari on this.
Look, they had no choice in 2015. It was the Final Four. They were on their biggest stage that college basketball gets, other than the Monday night game. That's it, and it was Kentucky. So, of course, they made the change. Now, you're right. The SEC has been better than the NCAA. That was an NCAA rule. But you're saying the SEC, you know, is trying to tweak some things on their own. And you're right. They have been way more proactive than most, especially when it comes to the NCAA. But this one is honestly, it's a no-brainer. It makes no sense. Forget how you have to get there. Forget what game it takes to get there. It doesn't matter who it is. Look, we know it affects other teams. You don't think there haven't been other teams screwed by this over the years? Of course. But they're in lesser conferences, you know, a game that's not on prime time, and so it just goes by the wayside. But it happens all the time, and it makes no sense whatsoever. Why would you want a game not to go – why would you want a crew not to go look at that and come away, which we all would agree, right? I mean, is there anybody out there saying it wasn't basket interference? It wasn't gold? I mean, really? I mean, most people all say, yeah, that shouldn't have counted.
I
shouldn't have went to overtime. Is there anybody out there that's going, now, wait a minute. If you look at that, I'm not sure. No. So if we're all on the same page, it's kind of like the catch rule. If we're all on the same page and we say, that basket shouldn't have counted, then shouldn't the crew be able to go over there and look at it for about 30 seconds and come back and wave off the basket and say, we're headed to overtime? And do the right thing. Instead, you don't have a rule that anybody that has half of a brain should get in a room and say, well, if we did it for the shot clock, we should probably do it for this. But they haven't.
My guess is next year this will be changed.
Of course, of course. Yes.
And it should be changed
And
already.
It should be changed. That's what I'm saying.
I think it should have been changed already by now.
Yes.
I don't know why they don't already
have
it.
Because they're not very smart.
You can review whether it went off of me or went off of you. When both of us have, we each have both of our hands going after a ball. Maybe there's a third player involved, and it's very difficult to tell, yet they still can go to the monitor. So why wouldn't you go to the monitor for this? It makes no sense to me.
I can't imagine that this is still a controversy next year. I'm sure by the tip of the first game of the college basketball season next year, I'm sure that rule will be in place. Because how hard is it to change that rule, honestly? How hard is it?
It's not hard.
And what are you affecting? You're affecting nothing but other than getting something wrong right now.
I would love for somebody to do a study in all the sports. Teams that have lost games because of a rule that was not in place, that is now a rule.
Because of that?
Like Chris Mason getting victimized by Matt Duchene on the offside.
Yeah.
Now you have an offside challenge. You could put together a long list.
Oh,
before there was a rule?
No question. Dan Schulman to wrap up the second hour of Darren and Donnick next. All eyes will be in Lexington tomorrow night. 7 o'clock tip in Rupp Arena. 7 o'clock hour time. Central. Our next guest will be on the call. Along with Jay Billis. And Rita Taylor. Dan Schulman. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to this game, as I'm sure you guys are.
Oh, man. It's one of, we know two, but we're trying to, we think because the SEC men's basketball tournament will be in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena, we think hopefully it'll be three matchups, and who knows?
Right.
They may see each other for a fourth time in the NCAA tournament. You never know.
That would be great. I will only have the opportunity to do one. I would certainly watch all four if there were four, but I'm locked in on number one right now, and I just can't wait to see what happens. And it, you know, it's funny because Tennessee's number one, and I think a lot of people know how great they are, but it shouldn't be this way. But it almost feels like this is going to be the first time that a lot of people are going to go, oh wow, I didn't realize how good these guys are, and that, you know, that's long overdue because they've been great all season long.
Could not agree more. Before we get into more of this matchup, we were just talking about the game on Tuesday night in Rupp Arena where we had the controversial ending. LSU got the win. And I want to ask you, do you think it's going to be a universal rule next year? We won't have this conversation that you'll be able to go over to the table and look at a play like that moving forward after this year?
Yes. And whether it's the last 2 minutes or just, you know, right at the buzzer, I don't know, but if you can look at the restricted area at the circle in the last 2 minutes, why can't you look at a goaltending call in the last 2 minutes? And I'm not one to advocate for more replay. We've got a lot of replay, and it slows the game down. I think we all like to keep it moving, but we saw the consequences maybe of not having it in an important moment. So yeah, I think it'll be put in, and I'm guessing it'll be similar to the restricted arc where you can go look at it in the last 2 minutes.
Can I ask you a nerdy play-by-play question?
Absolutely.
I'm just curious because you're always trying to make sure you're up to speed on every rule, and it's not easy. And I'm certainly not calling out Carl Ravish or Dick Vitale, but it seemed like they were unsure of it. Willie, right here across from me, he does all the TV games for the Predators. So 82 games.
We had one
plus.
The other night. Chris Mason and I, there was a subtle part of a rule, and both of us looked at each other, and we knew
right.
We weren't 100% sure.
So you know that that's going to happen at some point, no matter how yep. polished you are. How do you try to attack situations like that?
You hope it doesn't happen to you.
Good strategy.
And if it does, change the subject as quickly as possible, right?
Right. Well, as someone who, you know, the other half of my life is baseball, to me, baseball is the trickiest. Now, I don't do football or hockey, but baseball has all kinds of, you know, I never heard of that or, you know, things you never thought you'd see, you'll see. So, but you just try to stay up on it. And I'll tell you what I do. I do this a lot. If I'm watching a game, if I DVR a game and I'm watching it and they go to the monitor, I never fast forward. Like you could fast forward 2-3 minutes, get back to the action. I never fast forward. I want to know exactly what happened and exactly why they did it in case it's something I haven't seen before, in case it's something I'm going to see in the future. And the other thing I'll do is if I have any questions, even if it's Tuesday night, I'm watching a game. Now, Saturday, I'm in Lexington. I'll go up to the officials who obviously weren't on the Tuesday game. And I'll say, hey, got a question for you. This happened in another game. What's the ruling here? How should I know? I mean, you can't – there's no way to know everything, but, you know, you just try to plug the gaps wherever you can and hope you're up on it as best you can be.
Interesting. Does college – does one help you with the other? Is there any – because, you know, they're two different sports, baseball and college basketball. Does one help you with the other at all?
No, not really. I'll tell you what was interesting is a few years back I was also doing MBA for ESPN, and – that helped me in some ways, but it also got tricky in some ways because, well, that's 2 free throws on a technical in college, but it's only 1 in the NBA. And, you know, I mean, a simple thing like a technical counts as a personal in college, it doesn't in the NBA. That's an easy one. But as you dig a little bit deeper, there are, well, they do this differently than that, and that's not common here. It is common there and that sort of thing. So actually, sometime, I will tell you, I travel. Here's what's in my backpack, my laptop. My notebook, my charts that I put everything in, and a rule book. That's it. And when I was doing the NBA, there were 2 rule books. And when I do baseball, there's a rule book in my bag all the time. And I'll tell you, and anybody who does play-by-play knows this, there is no worse feeling than trying to grab your rule book and thumbing through it during a game.
It's helpless.
To try to find it. Because the only thing that you're not going to find it. You're just not going to be able to find it during a game. And then you're not going to be paying enough attention to the game, and you're going to screw that up too. So, you know, you try to do it at a break. But honestly, I you can't do this in hockey. You were talking about hockey. You can't do this in hockey because you're up top. The only sport you can do it in is basketball.
Yeah.
If you can call an official over at halftime or in a timeout and say, hey, tell me what happened there, you do it whenever you can.
Yeah, how about this guy, Willie? He never has to climb steps. That's what great. He just walks onto the floor, man. That's the beauty of doing basketball.
Hang on. At Duke, I do.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
That's right.
The crow's nest.
And in baseball, I do, although there are elevators too. But I've climbed a few steps in my life.
All right. That closes the book on my nerdy play-by-play questions.
All right.
Thank you for playing along, by the way. when you see this matchup tomorrow night, what are you, Dan Schulman, looking for?
Well, I have said on every radio show that I've been on, and I've said it often on ESPN as well, I'm not sure the last time I saw a team that is both as mentally tough and as physically tough as Tennessee. You know, we all know that, you know, Williams is probably 6'6", and Schofield 6'5". Like, we all get that stuff. But they are so tough, both mentally and physically. The notion of them going into Rupp Arena and being at all on their heels makes me laugh. Like, that's not going to happen. I think it's young Kentucky who's got to bounce back from a controversial, difficult loss, and they're trying to play their way into a number one seed, and let's see how Kentucky responds. I think Tennessee is remarkably consistent game after game after game, and I love them. And I had their one loss this year, you know, when Kansas got them in Brooklyn. But I think they're absolutely terrific, and I think Tennessee is going to come out and figuratively speaking, punch Kentucky in the mouth right away. And I want to see how the young kids of Kentucky react to that because they need that crowd on their side. They've got to make shots. And, you know, we know that Williams and Schofield are going to try to bully them a little bit. And let's see how that goes with a really important guy in my mind for Kentucky is Reed Travis. Because he's, you know, he's a grad transfer. He's a big guy. He's played in a lot of big games. And I think if he takes a leadership role and keeps those guys together and you know, keeps those guys on track, then I think I think it's going to be a great game. But I think I want to see how Kentucky reacts to Tennessee's toughness.
We're talking to Dan Shulman. He'll be on the call for ESPN for the big matchup that we have been anticipating for a couple of weeks now. Kentucky hosting Tennessee, who comes into Rupp Arena number one in the country. So, Dan, let's look at the Kentucky side of things. I think we've all marveled because I think we've had our discussions on our show at the beginning of the conference season where we weren't quite sure if Kentucky would mold and gel the way they have many times before. But they really look like they have come a long way in the last month, month and a half.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. And I don't look at the LSU loss as – you know, a battle. I think LSU's good. I mean, LSU is good. We all know that. And they've got some really good athletes. They've got a couple of pros on that team. Like, that was not a terrible loss, even though it was at home. But I agree with you. Kentucky is much, never mind November, as you said, even January, they are much better than they were then. And I think when Kwadae Green transferred, no disrespect to him, but I think it just kind of clarified roles, solidified roles. They've got a tight rotation now. Like, Calipari knows who his best five players are. There's no disputing who his best five players are. And he rides them hard. But he can also bring quickly Montgomery, Richards off the bench. Those are three pretty good players coming off the bench. Now, none of them may be that consistent. You know, Richards one night looks like an NBA player, and then the next night you wonder where he is out there sometimes. But he can really protect the rim. He can really block shots. Montgomery plays with confidence. He can block shots too. And I think this is a really good team. I don't know if they're one of the four best in the country, but they're one of the seven or eight best in the country. And on any given night, you know, Washington can go off, Hero can go off, Johnson can go off, Hagans can have a pretty big game at both ends of the floor. They got a lot of talented players here. This isn't an Anthony Davis Kentucky team, and it's not a 2015 Kentucky team, but it's better than some of his recent teams as well.
I think that's what a lot of people, Dan, are wondering right now from Tennessee's perspective is – it's exciting to be number one. They're unique, as you mentioned, the toughness. But can they win the whole thing? Now, you get a chance to see some of these top teams up close. The Duke with their overwhelming talent. You know, Virginia with their great defense. They've been there. Can Tennessee win this whole thing?
Sure, absolutely. Now, if Duke goes out and makes 13 out of 21 threes like they did against Virginia, it's over because they are so talented. But the funny part about that game, and we said this on the air, let's say they make 10 out of 21 threes, which is still a great percentage. It's nip and tuck. It's a ball game between Duke and Virginia. So if every team in the country plays their best, I think Duke wins. I also think Gonzaga is fantastic. And you know, Gonzaga's funny, and you guys know this as well as I do. They're right in the forefront of our minds in November, December, because they play big, big non-conference games, and then they disappear.
Right.
We don't talk about them much. We're asleep. They're beating up on the West Coast Conference, and then they show up as a one seed, and we say, all right, well, let's see. Let's see what they have here. They're really good. I had them in Maui. It's the only time I've had them, but I had them 3 days in a row in Maui, obviously when they beat Duke in that game, and they are great, and they have toughness too, and they have older players too. And I think Duke, Gonzaga, and Tennessee – no disrespect to Virginia, Kentucky, Michigan, Michigan State, anybody else. I think they've separated themselves a little bit. Tennessee's definitely good enough to win it because, like, say they get a guy in foul trouble, say they have a bad shooting day, they're not going to wither mentally. They're still going to be mentally strong, in my mind. They rebound well. They shoot well. You know, their field goal percentage is over 51%. They share the ball beautifully. And I just think they believe that they're better than anybody else every time they take the court, and they should. They've had the kind of season that is worthy of that, and I think Rick Barnes he's a great coach, and you know what he's done with this group is terrific. And as long as you know if they've got Williams, Bone, Schofield healthy and not in foul trouble, they can beat anybody in the country. And I'd love to see a Duke-Tennessee game. I'd love to see Williams and Schofield play two-on-two against Zion and Barrett. I think that would be great. I'd love to see these two teams play each other at some point.
Do you think you will ever call a Major League Baseball game in Nashville?
Oh,
wow.
How about that for out the door, huh?
Yeah. I would love to. I'll tell you this, actually. I have three boys. Two of them love sports. One of their bucket list things is to go see a hockey game in Nashville because it looks like so much fun on TV. But I would love to call a baseball game there. I don't think anybody's getting a new team until they sort out Tampa Bay and Oakland. And this has been dragging on for years, and it could drag on for a number of years. But if Tampa Bay and Oakland, either they relocate or they get settled, they've eventually got to get to 32. 30 is cumbersome in terms of the schedule. It doesn't work. 32 is much cleaner. I'd love to call one in Nashville. I think Portland would be on the list, and I think Montreal would be on the list too. But, you know, maybe Charlotte, maybe Vegas, who knows. But, yeah, I definitely think Nashville would be on the short list for an expansion team, and I'd love to do a game there.
Well, this is what we can promise you, Dan. It's up to you. It's your responsibility to get your boys here, but we'll take care of them, make sure they get to a game.
It is a done deal.
You have your people get a hold of our people, and we'll make it happen.
All right. Well, I am my people, but I'll talk to your people. I don't have people, but that would be great. I would love to do that. We've done every Christmas. I take them on like a 4-day trip, and I'm from Toronto, so we usually follow the Maple Leafs around. Wherever the Leafs are, we go. But we've never happened to get to Nashville, and it looks great. Like, it just looks awesome on TV. So careful what you offer. I may take you up on that.
Well, we'll take care of it. So you just let us know. Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. You got it. Thank you.
All right, that is Dan Schulman. He'll be on the call tomorrow night in Lexington for Kentucky.
One of the best.
And
one
Tennessee.
Of the best at what he does.
He's
no
really,
question.
Really good. Come back with You Just Made the List to kick off the third hour. That's next.